when we go back to the very beginning of creation, we notice something day after day after day through the 6 days of creation. And that is that God makes editorial comments, and he keeps on saying that it's good. Some days it's good more than once. Some days it's very good. There's one day that it doesn't say that it's good, and that was the first Monday. I think many people can appreciate that. First Monday comes along, and I think they say not to buy cars that were made on Mondays. The Midrash notes this in the second source, and it says, Lama ein ktiv b'sheni ki tov. Rabbi Yochanan tani la b'shem Rabbi Yossi ben Rabbi Chalifta shebo nivret gehinom. He says that on that day, hell was created. So that's quite a strong statement and something which intrigues us, that on the second day, and it doesn't say anything about that. I remember reading the text. It says nothing about hell being created. And it quotes a verse. Rabbi Chanina Omer, skipping a line, Shebo nivret machloket, that on that day, machloket was created. Shenemar, and this is what it does say in the Torah, v'yihi mavdil bein mayim l'mayim, that on that day God separated between water and water. Amar Rebbe Tavyome imachloket shehi l'tikuno shel olam u'liyishuvo ein ba kitov. He makes the observation, if a machloket which is to create the world, and even about that, there's an absence of good. It doesn't say that it's good. Machloket shehi le'ir buvo, a machloket which causes confusion, al achat kama v'chama, all the more so. So in these early days of Bereshit, we're not here yet. Man is not part of the drama yet. Man is not responsible for what takes place on that day. Yet we're told something very interesting, and machloket was created. Even without us, machloket was created. And what's the machloket? Machloket is between two things which are quite similar. Actually, between two things that you could even think that they're the same, because the two things are mayim and mayim. The two things are water. God separates water, upper waters, lower waters, and that's where machloket begins. By the way, this is true until today, that those who we often have the greatest amount of critique are those who are the most similar to us. I wrote about this in an article for Tisha B'Av a week or two ago, that even among what we would call religious Zionists, there is this huge schism which exists, where one side will accuse the other side of their rabbis not being orthodox because they're more lenient. And obviously, anything which I can't be lenient about is obviously not allowed. So therefore, if somebody allows something, then how can they possibly still be orthodox? And that's essentially how the thinking would go. But if years and years from now, I don't know how far in the future, historians or even anthropologists will try to understand the differences between the religious Zionist groups, they will not be successful. And for that matter, they'll have a hard time distinguishing us from other people who we think we're quite different from. And they're not going to understand all the arguments that we had, and they're not going to understand a lot of the literature which took place, and they'll end up saying it must have all been personal because it can't possibly have been ideological. Historians have their limitations as well. But we think about the second point, argument was created on that day, we now realize what the first point was saying, and that maybe that's why hell was created on that day as well. And how many good intentions arguments end up leading to someplace which is really, really quite unattractive and not on our itinerary. We go to the second chapter, and that's the first source. And here man is already a part of the story. V'yitzer Hashem Elokim et ha'adam afar min adamah, v'yipach bat av nishmat chaim v'yadam lenefesh chaya. Vita Shem Elokim Gan Be'eden Mikedem Vayasam Shemet Adam Asher Yatzar. Man is formed and man is placed in the Garden of Eden. And at this point, everything else should just be details, because how much more perfect can this be? A man created by God and placed in a perfect place, and everything should be perfection. And God created all kinds of trees. Nechmad l'mareh, pleasant to look at, v'tov l'machal, and we have that word tov again. And there's more goodness. Nutritious, good, tasteful. V'eitz ha'chayim b'toch hagan, and there's a tree of life in the middle of the garden. V'eitz ha'dat tov v'ra. And there's a tree which contains both tov and ra. And here, for the first time, we find ra introduced. Now, this should be very, very simple, staying away from this ra, staying away from this bad, staying away from... I mean, the other trees are good to look at. The other trees are very tasty. The other trees are very, very good for you. And this tree has tov and ra, which, by the way, you note, when tov and ra are together, what you then will have is an erbuvia. You'll have confusion, something that was already hinted at regarding machloket. Tov and ra are not so bad. It's when tov and ra get confused is when it's very bad. Because when tov and ra are separate, then you can identify them. But when tov and ra are confused, you no longer can identify them. Still in source 1, skipping to Pasuk Tet Vav, Yikach Hashem Elokim et Adam v'yinichenu b'gan Eden, lovdo l'shamra. And Adam had real simple work to guard, to work and guard the Garden of Eden. V'yitzav Hashem Elokim et Adam le'mor, and God commanded Adam, saying, Mikol eitz hagan ochal tochel, eat from all of the fruits, but from the good and bad, don't eat. Stay away from bad. Because the day that you eat from that, either you will die or you will bring death into the world. So here we don't have exactly ra, but it's lotov. Hayot adam levado, for man to be by himself. Aselo ezer kenegdo. Adam needs a partner. V'yitzar Hashem Elokim et Adama kol chayot ha'sadeh v'et kol of ha'shamayim v'aveil Adam lerot ma'yikra lo. And he brings all of the animals in front of Adam, v'kol ha'sheyikra lo Adam nefesh chaya hushmo. And whatever Adam calls, gives them names, puts them in categories. But you notice at this point there are two elements. One element is within the realm of things which grow, and the other element is the element of the animal world. And Adam over here is involved in both of those worlds, this working, tending, and guarding, and on the other hand, giving names to the animals. But he did not find someone for himself. And then God presents him with his wife, and we're skipping. Right, we don't have weddings during the 9 days, so we'll skip the wedding and move over to chapter 3, and we'll skip the sin as well, because the sin is well known. Right after they eat from the tree, v'tipachna inishnehim, both of their eyes become opened, v'yedu, and they know, which is an extension of the Eitz HaDaat, ki erumim, they realize that they're naked, v'tpura leita ina v'yisulim chagorot, and they make for themselves some kind of a covering, which means what an alei te'ina does, or what the chagorot do, is they stop you from being naked. They don't necessarily give you clothing, but they stop you from being naked. Well, one should note that what is this clothing made of? It's made out of the things which come from the ground. So the only thing that Adam is going to walk, the only souvenir he's going to take with him when he leaves the Garden of Eden, we will think, by the way, it won't be the case, that the only souvenir he'll take will be that fig leaf, but he won't get to take it. We then have a series of punishments. First punishment, which I skipped here, is this punishment of the serpent. And one of the things that will happen will be a separation between the animal kingdom and humans, and there will be a state of disunity between them. We will not get along with one another. Continuing into Pasuk Tet Zayin, Eli Isha Amar Harbe Arbe Itzvonech Vironech Be'etzev Tildi Banim. The word etzev over here, I think, is quite interesting. The word etzev meaning sadness. You'll bring children, but there will be a sadness. Pasuk Yud Zayin, Ol Adam Amar Ki Shamati L'Kol Ishtacha V'Tochal Min Ha'Etz Asher Tziviticha. Leimor Lo Tochal Mimenu, because you disobeyed me and you ate from the tree you were not supposed to. Arura Adama Ba'Overecha Be'Itzvon Talchena Kol Yimei Chayecha. And this etzev, the sadness, is paralleled between Adam and between Eve. With Adam, it's having to do with things which grow. With Eve, it's interesting, it has to do with the animal kingdom. It has to, when I say the animal kingdom, you'll say no, but it has to do with bringing life into the world, which is far more similar, especially when you realize that Adam looks at all the animals before he meets Eve. And now we're told that Eve is going to bring life into this world, but it will be with Etzev. So the two of them are going to continue their lives, and they're told, essentially, when we break down everything, because the details don't concern us, what we're told is they're going to have sadness in their lives. They're going to have sad lives. And that's, I guess, the saddest part of this, and one could say that that's simply the result of leading the Garden of Eden. When you're in the Garden of Eden, everything should be good, and everything should be happy, and everything should be pleasurable. But it's not just that they leave. It's not just the absence of Eden. Is what we're told, there's going to be sadness in your lives. There's going to be etzev. You're going to bring children with etzev. You're going to work. There's going to be etzev involved in this. V'kot v'dadar tatzmiach v'v'chalt et esav hasadeh v'zeta pecha tochalechem, and so on. And at the very end, kaf aleph, v'yas Hashem alakim adam lishtok tonet or v'yal b'shem. And God makes for them clothing. But over here it's called ketonot. Ketonet is actually more of a proper clothing, as opposed to just not being naked. This actually gives protection. And the ketonot that he makes them are made of leather. And I'm going to say it again, the same tension which has existed, if you've paid attention, and has been there from the beginning of the second chapter, it's things which grow and things having to do with the animal. The first thing of clothing comes from the leaves, and the second one comes from the animal, it's leather. And that's the parting gift which they have when they leave. And obviously it's actually a sign of a great deal of care on God's part, that even when we're going to be exiled, he makes sure that we're not completely vulnerable. Because the person who walks around with only a fig leaf is incredibly vulnerable, but God gives them sturdier clothing. There's one teaching that says that the clothing came actually from, that it came from the, from, it was snakeskin. And they were snakeskin, which it's one of these principles that we're always aware of, the theory of conservation of characters. So therefore, if it's leather, where did the leather come from? So it must have come from the serpent. And with that, Adam is sent away. Vayishlacheyu Hashem Elokim migan Eden. He's sent away la'avod et ha'adama asher lukach misham, to go and work the land where Adam was taken from to start with, which itself is a type of a reunion. Vayigaresh et ha'adam. Vayigaresh is stronger. The word gerushin would almost mean one of divorce. It's interesting that most of the Gemara that deals with the destruction of the Korban is in the Gemara of Gittin. I don't believe that that's an accident. Vayigaresh et Adam, there is this divorce between God and man. He sends him away, and he's thrown out of the Garden of Eden. And that is all a preamble to get to chapter 4, source 4. V'adam yadad chava ishto, and Adam, and again, this knowledge, tree of knowledge, they know one another in the biblical sense, it's the Bible. V'tahar v'telet, it's kayin. V'tomer keniti ishat Hashem. Now we know something because we read the last chapter. We know that this child has to be a child, that there's some type of apprehension, some type of fear, because she knows that this is going to be some type of pain involved in this. Is the pain only going to be involved in bringing the child into the world? Or is the pain going to continue every day of your life as you raise this child, which never stops? But she says something interesting in the naming of him. But Tomer Kaniti Ish Et Hashem. There's some type of, in her mind at least, a reconciliation perhaps, a relationship with God. And she sees her child in terms of this relationship with God. And then almost as an afterthought, Vatosef leledet et achiv. It's interesting, she could have said another son, but she has his brother. Et Havel. Doesn't even say who named him. Doesn't even tell if it's really his name. Hevel means nothing. Kayin, a relationship with God, an acquisition with God. Hevel, nothing. And we would begin to suspect that if one of the, well, it's hard to say, which one of these kids will need therapy? I guess they both will. They all end up needing therapy. But for different reasons. One, for having all of his mother's aspirations upon him, fix the relationship with God, that's heavy. And the other, because mom never noticed me. I was just sort of like an afterthought. We don't even know if they were twins. We don't know. We don't hear about the pregnancy. We don't hear anything. We just hear she happens to have another, she has his brother. Which is an interesting way of introducing him, because the editor, God, is telling us, who is Hevel? Hevel is, because somebody forgets this, Hevel is Cain's brother. And Cain doesn't seem to understand what exactly that relationship is supposed to mean. But he Hevel, and now we have an inverse, because it starts to speak about Hevel first, but he Hevel roetzon, and Hevel is a shepherd. V'Kayin haya oved adama. And Kayin was someone who worked the ground. And that same tension that I kept on pointing out, it's over here that we see it clearly. The two realms, the two worlds, the shepherd and the farmer. If you're from America and you grew up in Oklahoma, the cowboy and the farmer, and we all know they're supposed to be friends. They should be friends. But there's a big difference between the two of them. The big difference is that when you think about the shepherd, the life of the shepherd is a nomadic existence. The shepherds can go from place to place looking for an area to graze. While if you're going to be a farmer, you need a particular land which you need to make a demarcation, and you work and you cultivate that particular land. Which means the difference between these two approaches is really going to be one which could be quite stark, because the farmer does something which the shepherd may not appreciate. And what is that? He puts the fence up around and he says, this is my property. He says, this is mine. Maybe Cain, who will one day learn Chumash and understand that there's such a thing as a firstborn and rights of the firstborn, and the firstborn gets a double plot or double portion, and maybe therefore there is this connection to the land. But on the other hand, the nomadic shepherd perhaps resents the farmer and resents, who are you to put this fence around? Who are you to claim ownership over this land? Which means if you really want, we can even put economic theories in terms of the discussion. A capitalistic perspective, this is my land, versus the socialist, isn't this everybody's land? But it's interesting that, or we should note that the tension exists. There are those who point out, and I'm not going to go into it, by Hevel it says, Vayehi Hevel Roetzon, he was, V'Kayin Haya Oved, where it's said over in the past tense, and we wonder if he was successful. You know, there was a curse to this, the sweat of the brow. This wasn't going to be easy. Who knows if there's going to be success with this? And therefore, perhaps he tried and he failed, and there is a midrash which goes in that direction. But then we find Cain doing something which his mother had already trained him for, and his mother will get all the credit and all the blame, because that's the way it goes. Vayehi mikets yamim, which is a very scary term, the end of days. It's not what it means here, but it actually is a little more foreshadowing, because it will be somebody's end of days. Vayehi miketz yamim, at the end of days. Vayevei kayim mipri ha'adama mincha l'Hashem. He brought from the fruits of the ground an offering to God. So we respect Cain for one reason. We respect him for being the first. He's the first to offer to God. He's the first to reach out to God. He's the first to try to serve God, in any sense, as far as we can tell. But then we read the next verse, And it's only when we read the next verse we realize that maybe there was something wrong with what Kayin did. Pasuk Dalid. The Hevel Hivi Gam Hu. Now the Gam Hu, that's Hevel, that's who he is. He just this afterthought, he's this continuation. Mi Bechorot Tzono Umichevlehim. He brought the first and the choicest of his flock. So there's two offerings. Now, I'm sure that there are some people who would say that the difference is that God only accepts offerings which are of the flesh, and God doesn't accept offerings which are from the grain. That's just not true. There is such a thing called a mincha. There is a korban mincha. There are offerings which come from the ground. There is such a thing as even bringing your first fruits. And what is that called? That's called bikurim. Which again gives us reason to pay attention. When Hevel brings, he brings mi bechorot tzono. He brought his possession. By the way, notice that now the capitalist argument will be flipped. He brought his possessions. And what did Kayin bring? Mi pri ha'adama, without any possessive to it. Doesn't say from his. He brought from the land. So at this point, we're completely confused, but there's one thing that happened over here. And what is it? It's not the animal versus what grows, which is obviously the tension, but it's something else over here. It's that Hevel brought, what we said, the first and the choicest. Vayisha Hashem et Hevel ve'et minchato. And God accepts the gift from Hevel. By the way, it's interesting the word mincha is used here, because the mincha could just as easily have been the other offering as well. And therefore, what's the difference? He brought the first. Now, if those of you would prefer to see Hevel as a passive-aggressive, then you will note the significance of him bringing the first. He sacrificed the first of his fruits. He sacrificed the firstborn. And his brother may not have appreciated that all that much. But it's not just that he brought the first. He brought the first and he brought the best. And maybe that puts more pressure on Kayin, but something else happens over here. Again, two brothers, two worlds, two realms. The farmer, which is really working within the laws of expulsion from Eden. He has embraced the curse. His mother has set him up to try to fix something, to make an acquisition with God. He's working as per the rules of being kicked out of the Garden of Eden. While his brother is a shepherd. Now we will now know, and will those of us sensitivity to Nach will know, the shepherds are the good guys, and perhaps the farmers are the bad guys, but we'll come back to that in a moment. But God accepts Hevel. Now does God accept Hevel because he compared him to Kayin? Or does he accept Hevel because Hevel gave the best that he had? As a matter of fact, Rashi will quote the Midrash that when he brought the fruits, what grew, he brought something which was essentially inedible. What he can eat, he ate. And when he looks at his crop, and there's nothing, and there's stuff that he can't do anything with it anymore, so he goes, oh, let me bring something to God. I'll give that off to God. By the way, who do we want to be our rabbis? Do we want the ones who could have been doctors, or the ones who could have been lawyers? Or you want the ones that couldn't have done anything else? Okay, we'll send them to rabbinical school. Yes? I mean, the others can make a difference in the world. Anyway. He gets depressed. And let's read the verse. Pasuk Hey. And he becomes depressed. Why are you depressed? And the question is, why are you depressed? Is it his success which upsets you? Or is it your failure that upsets you? If it's his success that upsets you, there's nothing I can do for you. If it's your failure that is what's bothering you, you can do better. What does God continue to say? Halo im teitev sa'et, v'imlo teitev l'petachat et roveitz. It's up to you. You can improve yourself. This has nothing to do with your brother. V'lechet u'shukotov v'daltum sholpo. And if there's something else which is bothering you, you can control that. So between the lines over here, we understand exactly. God is a good therapist. You can do better. If he's what's bothering you, control that. That's nothing to do with you. V'yomer Kayin al Hevel achiv, and this is one of the great conversations that we have no idea what was said. V'yehi b'yotom v'sadeh, but that does tell us something. It was in a field. Who owns the fields?
Cain owns the field. Cain's the farmer. Hevel's the nomad. But Yakom Cain al Hevel Achiv Yargehu, his brother. I have to stress over here, Achiv, his brother, and he kills him. But Yomer Shem al Cain, Ei Hevel Achicha, where is your brother Hevel? And again, Hevel is always described as the brother. Where is your brother Hevel? But Yomer Lo Yadati, I don't know. Hashomer Achi Anochi. And you know what? If killing wasn't so bad, that would be the real sin. Hashomer Achi Anochi. And what's the answer to that question? Yes. And what happens to Cain, the farmer, who has worked the land? He's punished. And what's his punishment? Vayomim Masita called me Achicha Tzalkim Alay Min Adama. The land which had to open its mouth and take the blood of your brother. You will now wander the earth. And now we all understand what's the implication of him having to wander. He now takes the place of his brother, who was the nomadic shepherd. And with that, we end our second introduction for today. The rabbis have insight into what exactly are the implications of this. And obviously, there are many implications of it. And I'll quote what the rabbis say in source number 6, Midrash Tanchuma, V'yihi miketz yamim, ויבא קין יש מקץ שנה ויש מקץ שנתיים ויש ימים ויש 40 שנה אמרו חכמינו זכרון לברכה בני 40 שנה יקין והבל. So if you want to put an age on them, they were 40. ויבא קין מפרי אדמה מהו מן מותר מאכלו, what was left over from what he ate. ורבנן אמרי זרע פשתן היה, what did he bring? Flax. והבל הביא גם הוא מבחרות צאן ומחלביהם. Lefichach ne'asar tsemar upishtim. And the Midrash says, and that's the reason why you can't combine together wool and flax, flax and wool. And they say that is where the prohibition of shatnez comes from. Shenemar lo tibal shatnez. V'amar kadosh baruch hu eino din shitarev minchata choteh im minchata zakai lefichach ne'asar. We can't cause a confusion between tov and ra. We can't bring a confusion of good and bad, of the sinner and the righteous. And therefore, these two realms, which must remain separate realms, cannot be combined together. When you have a chance, perhaps you'll read the rest of the Midrash, which is quite interesting and important. But we'll go backwards now to the previous Source 5. Source 5 is in Parshat Kedoshim. Parshat Kedoshim tells us about the primary interpersonal relationships. It tells us about the significance of how we treat one another. And all of this continues off of the introduction, Kedoshim Tiyu, you shall be holy. So what's holiness? Because some of us can imagine holiness as something which is extraordinary. So when we read Parshat Kedoshim, the extraordinary really is the usual. Get to Pasuk Tet Zayin, Lo Telech Rachil Ba'amecha. Do not go around speaking gossip, which I believe is a Tisha B'Av theme. Lo Talmoro Dam Re'acha Ani Hashem. And don't stand on your brother's blood, which the image now, at least today, should take us back to that field which Cain thought was his, which was now soaked with his brother's blood, which had to open its mouth and swallow that blood. Lo Tisne Tachicha Bilvavecha. Don't hate your brother in your heart. And if there's something which needs to be fixed, then give rebuke. And don't cause him to sin by not giving him the rebuke. Don't take revenge and don't bear a grudge at Bnei Amecha. And finally, and love your neighbor as yourself. Ani Hashem, I am God. And what's the verse that follows this? What's the completely, completely anticlimactical verse? Et chukotai tishmaru, bemtecha lo tarbe kalayim, sadcha lo tizra kalayim, ubegit kalayim shatniz, lo yale alecha. Even within the realm of animals, don't confuse.
even within the realm of things which grow, don't confuse. And certainly between the two realms, don't confuse. When we think now back at this midrash, which is a midrash over here, the midrash is really telling us, I believe, that there's holiness in this world, and the holiness really, and I'm sorry for going backwards, because this is really what the midrash means. Where is the holiness? The holiness is in every single human being. And you don't see that holiness, and you think that's expendable. That means there's holiness in this world, which you can simply do away with. It's not needed. It's not necessary. And that's really the way the Kain, who never gave a second thought of it. Who's Hevel? He's an afterthought. Who's Hevel? There's no hopes with him. Who's Hevel? He doesn't really have a relationship with God, except for one problem. Hevel on the side, little quiet Hevel on the side, the nomadic guy who wanders about, can't sink his roots, can't make a commitment. This Hevel suddenly figured out how you offer the best that you have to God, and God responded. And that's the one that Cain decided, well, we don't really need him. The world doesn't need him. Apparently, he never realized there was holiness. And what the Midrash is saying, the response of Cain killing Hevel, is a new mitzvah was created. A new sense of holiness. To realize you can't just combine species, you can't make things disappear. And all of these things of Kliam now are seen completely differently when you realize that's the follow-up. What is the follow-up to? Don't stand on your brother's blood. Don't hate your brother in your heart. Love your neighbor as yourself, and don't wear shatnez. So I know that if I said that by itself and don't wear, what does one thing have to do with the other? And by the way, what does this mean for us? This means for us that the next time you go to a store and you look at something, and you say, hold it. Oh, and you have a check for shatnez if it's appropriate. Or it says 50% linen and 50% wool, 100% shatnez. So you don't buy that. But it's not just because it's a chok, and it is a chok. But it's not just because it's a chok. It's the way that I remember to love my brother as myself. And by the way, if all that I do is I always make sure that my clothing's okay, but I'm a little lenient on the other side of things in terms of hating my brother in my heart and not loving my neighbor as myself. And so then there's something profoundly wrong, which means the brilliance of Parshat Kedoshim is how it brings these two sides together. And that, I believe, it's what's identified by this midrash, by going back and saying, take a look at the first one who didn't, shall we say, love his brother as himself. Who's the first one who did hate his brother in his heart? Who's the one who did stand on his brother's blood? Who's the one who didn't love his neighbor as himself? And by the way, make sure you don't wear shatnez. It just seems to make so much more sense when we now realize this midrash. Moving to a third source. Source number 7. Vikach Korach ben Yitzhar, ben Kahat, ben Levi, v'tatan v'ron, b'nei Eliyah, v'on ben Pelet, b'nei Ruven. They took something. What did they take? It doesn't tell us yet. V'yikum l'fnei Moshe, v'anashim b'nei Yisrael, chamishim v'atayim yiseida, kriyei mo'ed anshei shem, v'yikalu al Moshe v'al arod, v'yomor leim, rav lechem, ki kol ha'ida, kulam kedoshim, uv'tocham Hashem. Everyone's holy. Now, saying that everyone is holy, and to say that no one is holy, is really the same thing. And I know that maybe that doesn't make sense. But going at least as far back as the Zohar, it tells us about the identity of the protagonists. Hevel is Moshe. Moshe is the modest man that there ever was. Hevel doesn't think that much of himself. Moshe was a shepherd, and Hevel is a shepherd. And the Zohar is very, very happy and very clear to make this association. The other association which then is made is that Kayin is Korach. Now Korach just said everybody's holy. But if everybody's holy, then everybody's the same. And if everybody's the same, then what follows? Then everybody's expendable. And if everybody's exactly the same, we don't need Moshe, we don't need Aaron, because I can do it. Do any of us really believe that we are the same as Moshe Rabbeinu? Do any of us really believe that we're the same as Aaron HaKohen? That was the sales pitch that Korach was... And look at the popularist way that he presents it. Everybody's holy. Yes, it's true that everybody's holy. But that doesn't mean that everybody is Moshe Rabbeinu. Everybody's holy because they're unique.
And Korach comes and tries to use the exact opposite. And what happens to Korach? Well, first of all, what does he want? Korach wants to become the Kohen Gadol. Everybody's the same. I should be the Kohen Gadol. Why should Aaron be the Kohen Gadol? But what's the punishment which ends up happening? And that's where one should pay attention to. What is the punishment which happens? The earth, and this is the only time that the same phrase is used. Continue, Pasuk Lamed, in the same source. V'imbriya yivra Hashem upatsta hadama et piya. The earth should open up its mouth and swallow them. And again, you can't miss this reference. And by the way, the other thing which is interesting, as you fall deep into the nether world, there's almost this concept of hell. Machloket, the great machloket, is the machloket, is it between Moshe and Korach? No, it's Korach. It has nothing to do with Moshe. And that's why it's the argument between Cain and Hevel all over again. It was all in, nothing to do with Hevel, it was all Cain. It was all in Cain's mind. It has nothing to do with Moshe. This is all Korach's tortured mind, which takes us there. But look at the way that a person, and again, just to go in order, we have one person who's tortured because God liked the other one better. And instead of saying that I can do better, I need to improve myself, I compare myself to somebody else, and by the way, that's not necessarily a bad thing to compare yourself. You can say, that person can accomplish so much, I have just as much talent as them, I can accomplish much more. That's wonderful. That's called kinat sofrim arbeh chokhmah. That when you're jealous, sofrim, authors, or it's scholars. If scholars are jealous of one another, it causes there to be more books in the world, which theoretically is a good thing. But if I compare someone else, if my self-worth is based on my comparison with somebody else, it's at that point something is wrong. And how does this then get out of control? When a Cain can kill a Hevel. How does this get out of control? When a Korach can then declare in a rebellion against Moshe Rabbeinu. And then now we can get to the main part. So everything else was introduction. Source number 8. Another set of brothers who we kind of hoped would get along. Ela told it Yaakov Yosef ben Shvasre Shana Yaro'eh Tachav Batzon. That's a real interesting term. He would shepherd his brothers. Well, was Yosef a shepherd? Well, not necessarily. He would, actually we're told, he would tell about, and that's the continuation of the Pasuk, V'yaveh Yosef et dibatam ra'ah el avihim. If his brothers did something wrong, he would go and tell their father, which there's one of two ways of looking at this. One way of looking at this is that Yosef is a terrible person who all of us would hate, and the other one is that he noticed his brothers doing things which were wrong, and he didn't feel it was right for him to be the one to tell them, so he goes and tells their father because it's appropriate for the father, because he loves his brothers and he wants them to do better. V'Yisrael havit Yosef mikol banav, ki ben zekunim lo, because he was a very wise child. V'asoluk tonet pasim, and that same word comes at us again, and he made for him a ktonet. He made for him a ktonet. Well, we know it's of many colors. The question is why he does this, and let's leave that question for a little bit. V'yurachav ki oto ahav aviyah mikol achav yisnu oto. They see their father loves him, they hate him. And then Yosef decides to share with them a dream that he has. V'yachalom Yosef chalam, v'yaged lachiv, Yosef otzna oto. Before we even told what it is, by the way, this is similar to they go out in the field and they speak, and we're not told what he says. Yosef has a dream, we don't even know what it is yet, they hate him. V'yomor leim shemuna chalom azeh shechalamti. No, but listen to the content. V'nei nachno ma'almim alumim b'tocha sadeh, v'nei kama alumatei v'gam nitzva, v'nei tisvaneha alumoteichem v'tishtachavena l'alumati. Yosef says that I have stalks and you have stalks, but your stalks bow down to my stalks. And all of us always have read this in terms of the next verse. Their interpretation, Hamloch Timloch Aleinu, are you going to rule over us? Imashotim Sholbanu, will you really be the one, it's almost the language of a dictator? And they hated him more. There's something deeper which is going on here. He has another dream which we're going to skip, and we'll go to verse 12. And the brothers go to deal with their flocks. V'yom Yisrael el Yosef, halo achicha ra'im b'shchem. Your brothers are shepherding in Shchem. Go, l'chobish l'cha aleihim. Meaning Yaakov was very happy with this relationship. Go and see what they're doing. Come back and tell me what's going on. V'yishlacheihu. You notice that phrase from before also, right? V'yishlacheihu me'emi chavron v'yavoshchema. V'yamtzeihu ish v'nei toa b'sadeh. V'yishaleihu ish le'mor matibakesh. Yosef gets lost and goes, what are you looking for? And very unlike Kayin, who says, Hashomer achi anochi, what does Yosef say? Et achai anochi mevakesh. I want my brothers. Higidon ali eifohim orim, where are they? Now why is this so complicated? Because his brothers are shepherds. And what do shepherds do? They wander. And just because they went to Shechem doesn't mean they end up by Shechem. They went further north from Shechem. They went to a place called Dotan. I know there's many midrashim that tell you what Shechem is and all the bad things that happened in Shechem. They even claim that Yosef was sold in Shechem. He was sold in Dotan. Dotan is also a bad place. It's Jenin. V'yelech Yosef achar echav yimtzei b'dotan. And he finds them over there in Jenin. Now, I came to understand what happens next, based on something that I read from Rabbi Soloveitchik. I have it for you in source number 9, and if you want, we'll read it, but I'm not going to interpret it the way that Rabbi Soloveitchik interpreted it, but we're going to utilize what he says. This, by the way, all of you who feel frustrated that you can't reach Rabbi Soloveitchik because he makes up words, so this you can read. This is from the 5 addresses. His 5 Zionistic speeches, and not only could you read it, you should read it. What did Yosef seek? What did he aspire? What foreboding troubled him? The answer is an obscure feeling of insecurity frightened him. What were the elements of this insecurity? The biblical Yosef was not persuaded that Jacob dwelt in the land of his father's wanderings, would endure for long. The words, your seed shall be strangers in an alien land, kept tolling in his ears. He saw himself and his brothers in an alien environment, far from the land of Canaan, in new circumstances and new conditions of life. In his dream he saw, behold, we are binding sheaves. We're no longer in Canaan. We're in the new land of Egypt. We can no longer be shepherds. Now, I want to stop right there. You can read the rest of it afterwards and see what Rabbi Soloveitchik does with this. One of the important things that he says is the mistake of analyzing the present in terms of the past, which is the mistake that all of us make, because that's what we're trained to do. Instead of looking at the present and saying, what is really going on now, what we tend to do is just look at things. I know that those who don't remember history are cursed and so on, but sometimes when you remember history, you assume it's the exact same case again. And the brothers, he says, assumes that what happens today will happen tomorrow. And therefore, the tension over here, and as I said, I'm completely diverting from what Rabbi Soloveitchik says and goes with this, but I'm interested in something else, which I hope you already anticipate. Yosef's dreams of being a farmer. The brother's dream and actuality is that they are shepherds. Who are the good guys? We already said that, the shepherds. Who is the bad guy? The farmer. When we go back where I paused in the middle of that Yosef narrative, when they see him from afar, and they say, let's kill him. That was still in verse 8, the last line on page 2. But Yeru'ah tomi rechoku b'terem yikrav aleihem v'yitnaklu oto l'hamito. They saw Yosef as being Kayin. What are his dreams? He wants to be a farmer. We never had a farmer in the family. We're shepherds. And what is Yosef saying? Yosef is saying the future is not going to be the same. Should I say all this a little differently? Going back to close to what Rabbi Soloveitchik said, but still a little different? The Jews have wandered the world for 2,000 years. We've had a nomadic life. Does that mean the future we have to be nomads? Or is the time come that we need to come back to the land and buy land, become farmers? Again, it's not just farmers. But we can come back and sink our roots in this land. Or we can say, no, the minhag in our family for 2,000 years was not to stay in the same place more than 100 years. No. Yosef sees the future. Yosef sees the future, and Yosef knows the Brit Bein HaBetarim. Yosef knows that one day this will be our land. One day we're going to become farmers. which means the brothers look at him as being Cain. So what do you do when Cain is coming at you? They're shepherds, and here comes Cain coming through the field. We've seen this movie before. Cain tries to kill them. They don't trust him. So what's the right thing to do? Preemptive strike. So what do? You kill him. They see him coming, and they start to conspire. But you tell him to. Right? We're going to send him, isn't that interesting, into the ground, into a bore, the ground will swallow him up, just like Korach, just like taking revenge on the blood of Hevel. We'll throw him into the pit, and then we'll see what will happen. Now the next two stages, Reuven says, don't kill him. Don't spill blood. By the way, should I say this now? Don't be like Cain. We're not the kind of people who kill. By the way, I know that Shimon and Levi are there. But maybe that's a little different. We don't kill our brother. Now, we know that Reuven is thinking of saving him. By the way, one of the reasons Reuven wants to save him, because Reuven actually has some respect for Yosef. The reason he has it is very simple. What was Yosef's dream? He dreams of 11 stars bowing down to him. He includes Reuven. Reuven had a bad episode in the past, and maybe he had some guilt and thought that he's going to be kicked out of the family, but he dreams of him as being part of the family. He appreciates that. He'll save him. But that's not what he says. What he says is, let's throw him into the pit, let him die by himself. We're not going to spill blood. Let nature take its course. Nature is very beautiful in that way. Nature has a way of dealing with people like this. Let the pit take care of him. They sit down to eat. V'yishvu lecho lechem, v'yisu enehem, v'yurinei orachat yishmeilim bam migilad, u'gam leo nos'im noch'ot, and so on and so forth. V'yomer Yehuda elechav ma'betza ki naroget achinu. What are we going to gain from killing our brother? Now, if we would pause right here, we know what he's saying. He's our brother. What are you going to gain from killing your brother? And you would figure what he means is that we have to stop. And then he continues and he says, "V'kisinu adamo, l'chuvenem karanu li'ishmaelim. Let's sell him to the Yishmaelim. V'yadeinu al tiyabo, and we should not do anything to him. Ki achinu bisarenuhu, because he's our brother. He's our flesh and blood." V'yishmor chav, and they listen to him. Now this is completely preposterous. Again, I want to say it. What's the background? The background is they think he's Cain and they're Hevel. We need to kill him. Preemptive strike. Second thing is, let's not kill him. We'll put him in the pit, which is really poetic justice, and let the pit take care of him. And then Yehuda comes and says, no, he's our brother. We can't do this. Let's sell him. And we're listening and saying there's something wrong. But I'll tell you, this is not the first time I'm saying this, but I'll tell you exactly what went through Yehuda's mind. He had a sign from God. Who just came by Yishmael? Who's Yishmael? Yishmael was sent away. Yishmael is the son of Avraham. Who's the one who sent him away? Sarah said send him away. Avram hesitates. But what do you do with a brother who's a bad guy? You send him away. What happens immediately afterwards? V'yivru anashim Midyanim socharim. And Midyanim then come. Who's Midyan? Midyan is the son of Keturah, right? Avram's concubine. Yehuda's watching this and he has a sign from God. The sign from God is, look, it's Yishmael, look, it's Midian. Of course that's the solution. We don't kill brothers, we're like Hevel. We care for our brothers. We'll just sell him, send him away. And all of us know that there's something which is terribly wrong, and I'll give you a hint. If you get a sign from God what to do with somebody that you hate and hate for bad reasons, it's probably not really a sign from God. Okay, that's just a little insight that we should have. But that doesn't stop the brothers at that moment thinking that this is a divine plan. And maybe it was a divine plan, but the plan was very, very different. Now I want to go back to Yaakov. When Yaakov gives him this clothing, Yaakov gives him the ketonet apasim. Later on, we're going to find the idea of ketonet in a completely different context. And that's going to be in source number 10, of Vnei Aaron tasek kutnot. And for the children of Aaron, you're going to make kutnot. The children of Aaron are going to wear special clothing. there's going to be clothing for the Kohen. And I just want to go back to make sure that you understand where this went and where this is going. The first one to bring an offering was Kayin, but he didn't do a good job of it. The first one to bring the offering which was accepted was Hevel. Who was supposed to be the Kohen, or who's the first one who functions as the Kohen? Well, the first one who successfully functions as the Kohen is Hevel, but he sort of got murdered. Yaakov giving the clothing to Yosef was declaring that who Yosef is the Kohen. Yosef is the one who's going to be not the one who shepherds with everyone else. He's the one who's supposed to be the Kohen. And when they see him coming, they're going to kill him, which means that we're going to kill a Kohen. They're going to kill a Kohen who was also a Navi, by the way. And if not a Navi, real close to Navi, because he had dreams, and his dreams tended to all come true. If you recall one of the themes that we read in the keynote today, one of the themes which is in the Gemara and various Agadot, it says that they killed a Navi whose name was Zechariah. By the way, in case you think it's just a Midrash, and I'm sorry if you use the word just, it happens to be a pasuk in Divrei Hayamim. That Zechariah started to give Musar, and the response was, they killed him. They killed him in Beit HaMikdash. They killed a Navi and a Kohen, he was a Kohen as well, they killed him in the Beit HaMikdash. When the Gemara explains why Aaron hesitated when it came to the whole episode with the golden calf, it says, Vayar, he sees what they did to Hur, they just killed Hur, and he says, if I do something, they're going to kill me. And if they kill me, they'll be guilty of killing a Kohen and Navi. I don't know if that's Beit Hashem, by the foot of Har Sinai, and he says they'll never be forgiven. Rashi on the Gemara says, in absolute terms, why did the Chorban first Beit HaMikdash take place? Because they killed Zechariah. He says that is the reason. Everything else which is said by Chazal is commentary, that is the reason. When you kill, okay, you mess up and you do Avodah Zarah. You know what? It happens. And then God sends a Navi and says, you messed up, you did Avodah Zarah. And you have one of two choices now. What's choice? Which one do you want to take? Choice A is saying, you know what? Too much Yetzahara. I'm sorry. You're right. I'll fix my ways. Second choice is shut up and stab him in the heart. Actually, they stoned him. Maybe a little better. They stoned him in the Beit HaMikdash. And when you kill a Navi who has the truth, when you kill a Navi who's trying to help you, who's trying to fix your ways, who's trying to make you a better person, so why do we need a Beit HaMikdash anymore? What's the purpose of the Beit HaMikdash if you're going to kill a Navi and a Kohen in the Beit HaMikdash? So it just, that's it. That's what Rashi's saying. That's it. You don't have a Beit HaMikdash anymore. They see Yosef not as the chosen one who's really looking out for their spiritual good. And he was. And that's why he told his father. And what evidence do I have? Every single thing he did the rest of his life, he's looking out for his brothers. And I'll say it again. If Kayin says, Hashomer ochi anochi, what would Yosef say to that? Hashomer ochi anochi. He gives them food. He gives them jobs. He takes care of them. Dechayani anochi mvakesh. That's who he is. He's looking for his brothers. But it's interesting when you have a Kohen that you don't want as Kohen. Now, the Maharal says something. Okay, before I get to the Maharal, I'm going to skip 11, which is real interesting, and you'll read it. With Yonatan Eifshitz, which is a later source in 12, writes, V'nishmat Korach haya l'kayin u'lekach halak al Moshe shei nishmat hevel v'nechleku az kayin v'hevel al kuhuna g'dola. And now you realize they're arguing about the kuhuna g'dola. That's important. I want to say one more thing about the Kohen. And I'll say two things together. There's two mitzvot that override shatnez. One is tzitzit, and the other is the clothing for the Kohen and for the Kohen Gadol, which means they can wear shatnez. Of course, the question is why. Now, it's far more interesting now when we read the Midrash that says that Korach and his men, Rashi quotes it, walked in wearing clothing. They wore tzitzit shet kulo tchelet. The portion immediately prior to Korach was the portion of tzitzit. That's what happened right before. They're wearing tzitzit. Kulo tchelet. We have no idea what that means right now. The Kohen Gadol was able to wear shatnez. Why? How could you allow someone to wear shatnez? How could this possibly be allowed? So keep those questions in mind, and we're going to see how far we get. Source 13 is the Maharal's commentary in Pirkei Avot. I'll remind you what it said in Pirkei Avot first. It says, Hillel, who's one of the good guys, says that we should be students of Havei Tamidei Shel Aharon. And what should we be doing as students of Aharon? Ohev Shalom, Verodev Shalom. In Avot Rabbi Natan, and then it continues, and it says, what did Aharon do? And I think this is one of the things we all learned as kids, that if two people were fighting, he would go over to one and say the other one wants to make up. He'd go over to the first and say, they want to make up, and they would end up making up. And our conclusion should be that Aharon was a habitual liar. And how in the world does Aharon end up becoming the Kohen Gadol? One of the things that it points out is that when Moshe dies, it says that the children of Israel mourned him for 30 days. But when Aharon dies, it says all of Kol Beit Yisrael mourned him for 30 days. So why? It's because they loved him. And why did they love Aharon? By the way, that's what's interesting. Aharon succeeds where Yosef doesn't succeed. Yosef functions as the Kohen, and which is why he can wear the ketonet. But the brothers don't think he can wear the ketonet, and they rip it off of him. Aharon can wear it, and everybody accepts it, because they all sense that Aharon loves them. And by the way, that's also a skill. There are many people, this is very important, there are many people who we love who they don't know that we love them. There are many people we care about who just don't know it. There are many people that we have these feelings towards them. They never know it, and that's not good. And Yosef and his brothers, that's part of what happens. Yosef cares about them. Yosef cares about them so much, but they don't feel it. They're caught up in their own jealousy. They're the ones who are actually caught up in a mindset which is far more similar to Cain than they'll ever want to admit. They have jealousy of their brother. They have jealousy of his success. They judge themselves in terms of him. They can accuse Yosef all they want of being like Cain because of his dreams, but who is really the ones who are far more like Cain, who see themselves, their own inadequacies, through the prism of their brother's success, and therefore they can't possibly appreciate it. And therefore it's hard for Yosef to be a Kohen. And maybe a Kohen who the Tzibur doesn't accept really can't be a Kohen. Maybe he really can't be a Shliach Tzibur. But Aharon, they all love Aharon. And that's where the Maharal comes in Source 13. Hilo v'shamay kublu mehim ki ha'olam hazeh hu misugal l'machloket b'yoter b'kol hadvrim shabolam. The thing that we have to be most careful about in this world, which was already presented on the second day, is machloket, is arguments. Ki zeh inyan olam hazeh sh'olam ha'pirud v'achiluk l'kach ha'machlokot ragil b'olam. We fight about everything, and that's why there's so many arguments. Almost the same day the world was created, arguments came into the world. The olam min kain vehevel, and continues with kain and hevel. Shemizet yireki machloket misugal olam azeh bavur ki olam azeh hu olam hachiluk vapirud. This is a world of division, separation. V'kasher yesh b'olam azeh pirud v'chiluk yemidato l'chaber hamechulakim. And therefore, what is the job? To bring people together. V'yesh l'shol harbe b'mar Hillel shamar harbe mitamidav shel Aharon. V'yafki b'vaday kach hu sh'Aharon haya oev shalom v'odev shalom avol pirish ma sh'amar v'mitamidav shel Aharon ki Aharon haya kohen gadol v'kohen gadol hu miyuchad liyot mekasher Yisrael ad shi Yisrael am echad kasher yale mishkan echad u'mazbeach echad hafacha umot kumo sh'amu b'midrash. When it comes to the other nations, they have lots and lots of mizbachot, of bamot, and lots of kohanim serving them. We had one mizbeach, we had one kohen gadol, we had one beit hamikdash. Kasher yakorach cholet galkunat Aharon amar leMoshe Rabbeinu lo shalom, v'derechi goyim kohanim harbe kulam mitkabtzim bebayit echad, v'anu ein lanu ela Hashem echad, v'torah echad, u'mishpat echad, v'kohen gadol echad. Ulakach Aharon rodev shalom bin ishu bein chavero shloy muchulakim b'machlokot rak yu am echad. V'chein haya Aharon mekarev et Yisrael l'makom yidei korbanot. So what is really the purpose of the Kohen? The purpose of the Kohen is to bring life into the world. whatever you bring life, people who are close to death because of their sins, because of the poison, the job of the Kohen is to cause rebirth, to cause them to become alive again. That's the job of the Kohen. But if that's the job of the Kohen in the Beit HaMikdash, what Aaron understands is that's also the job of the Kohen outside of the Beit HaMikdash. L'fichach amar havi talmidav shel Aaron klomar me'ach she'Aaron hu miyuchad u'misugal lazeh. I'm going to continue a little bit more of the Maharal, what he writes in Netivot HaShalom, which is in Netivot Olam in Source 14. He raises a question here and says, but Aaron lied. Aaron lies to people. So he says the following. He says, Aaron brings peace to the world. Peace is Shalom. Shalom is God's name. We're allowed to destroy God's name, the Sota, to create peace. Let's read a little bit. Upirish the birds there, Mashashina Kadishbark Mea Shalom, Hikach Midata Shalom Batsmo, Shakach Tsarech Lasot Kasha Rodiv Shalom Bein Shnayim, Hamukulakim Shayomer Lizea Shayashar Bein Nav, and so on. We'll skip a little bit. Vim Ein Shalom Hareyesh Machloket, Vachol Machloket Husanui Bolam Lagamre. All arguments are hated. Lakach Yotr Tov Shia Mishaneb Ne Shalom. And that's why you can change, you can lie for the sake of peace. Go a little bit further down where it's bolded. Ulakach mutar l'shanot kedei lasot shalom kasher Hashem yitbarach hu mishaneh l'kol achad v'achad gam kin mei shalom v'dover zeyesh lo lavin ma'od. Because you have to understand the depth of this. Ma sh'amar gadol ha-shalom sh'Hashem nechtav b'ktusha yimche kedei lasot shalom dover ze ki Hashem yitbarach gam kin shmo shalom. You can destroy God's name. Which name do you destroy? Yud kei vav kei. You destroy it. You take the little parsha of Sota and you melt it in water in order to bring this fighting couple. And they're both wrong in that situation. He's too jealous. She has bad judgment. She should not have been secluded with another man. He should not have been jealous. They're both wrong in this case. But it says they're both wrong. God says, go, you can destroy my name. But why can you destroy my name? Did he understand what the morale just said? Because which name do you destroy? What we consider to be the holiest name. Yud, hey, vav, hey. We don't even spell it. We don't even say it. Because he says, you know what God's real name is? God's name is Shalom. You can destroy God's name because God's name is really peace. To create peace, we can do all kinds of things. And by the way, just think about all of the arguments that we have which create the opposite situation of peace because we're so concerned about making a Kiddush Hashem in the world, even though in the process we make a Chilul Hashem and we don't have peace, we don't have Shleimut, and we think we're doing Kiddush Hashem and God is looking and saying, but Shalom. Maharal quotes sources which I can't even quote by saying it's okay if the Jews do Avodah Zarah as long as they get along with one another. I'm not going to quote it. Because you're going to say that. How could the Maharal say such a thing? Because he understands something which is very deep. And we live in a world that we're so concerned with ideological purity, that we're so concerned that our way is the only way and the correct way, and everything else is absolutely wrong. And now we read, but Aaron was a Kohen Gadol, and everybody loved him, and he loved everybody, and he was so concerned about peace. And suddenly truth was not as important, but it's not because truth is important. It's because peace is the greatest truth. Should I say that again? It's because peace is the greatest truth, and that's what Aaron understood. The Zohar, which initially I had a far larger quote from it, which is the last source, it's not even numbered here, I see. The Zohar finally asks the question and says, but how in the world can a Kohen wear shatnez? Going back to the problem. What happened to Cain and Hevel? It says because the Kohen, or the Kohen Gadol, or the Mishkan, or the Beit HaMikdash, whatever you want to choose, reflects a higher truth. It reflects things as they take place in heaven. Machloket is connected to hell. This connects to things which are up in heaven. From the perspective of heaven, he sees how we're one. He sees how we should be unified. He sees how we should get along. The Kohen Gadol sees things from above. And at that point, the divisions between Cain and Hevel are no longer important. The divisions between the shepherds and the farmers are no longer important. Because looking from above, you see unity. That's what the Zohar says in the source. And that's why when you're connected to a world above, from the way that God looks at the world, God is Shalom. God is Shalem. God is Shlemut. Everything is united. everything is perfect. Everything should be peaceful. And when you see things from that perspective, then of course you can put on shyness. Because you're doing it from not a place of division, not because you live in this world of divisiveness, but rather you live in a completely different world, in a world which is really what we're still mourning for, which isn't here. When you think about mourning for the Beit HaMikdash, that's what we mourn for. We mourn for leaders that have that kind of perception, that really can see everyone with love. That they can see the equality of everyone, even though they're not the same. And it's quite cruel to actually need that stone in order to try to put everybody into one bed of the same size. That's need that stone, what Korach was really doing. Korach is claiming to be a Kohen Gadol. He brought death into the world. Kayin, was he trying to be a Kohen? I don't know. He brought death into the world. Yosef was a candidate to be Kohen, but they couldn't accept him because the love went one way. And when the beginning of Shemot starts and Aaron goes and he meets Moshe and it says that he kisses him and he embraces him and he loves him, the Maharal further says that is part of redemption. Meaning this book of Shemot is going to be a book of redemption because we have love. We have leaders who can love one another and leaders who can love the people. And if leaders who can love the people and there's unity, that's where redemption comes from. It's not a coincidence that that's the way that this book begins. That's why this book will lead to a redemption. We miss the Beit HaMikdash, but not for reasons, because we necessarily, don't misunderstand me, necessarily even identify with the Korbanot. We don't. It's very foreign to us. But we do identify with peace. We do identify with unity. And maybe that's the reason that Rashi quotes this beautiful teaching that the third Beit HaMikdash will come from above because it is a perception from above. On the other hand, the Rambam says that we have to build it. And I'm not talking politically and I'm not talking I'm not talking about going up to the temple right now and building it. Not at all. But we have to build it in the sense that we can't just wait for something to happen from above. We need to have more love. We need to have more peace. We need to have more unity. We need to stop judging others and assuming all the bad within them. We have to stop comparing ourselves to others. We need to have far more kindness to those that are somewhat different from us, because when it comes down, everybody is different from us. And we need not to judge our success or failures in terms of others. We all need to become the best people that we can become and let all the others feel the love that we have towards them.